welcome to another episode of the Games in Schools and Libraries podcast. I'm Donald Dennis, and you can find me all over the wilds of the internet as Walsfio. And with me today is Stephanie Fry.
Hi!
And today we're going to be talking about what, Stephanie?
Four-player couch co-op!
And what does that mean?
That means that four players can play a game together in the same room.
Right, so locally on the same machine with the appropriate amount of controllers. And so we're going to focus today on games that will support four players locally like that.
Yay!
Why is this a big deal?
This is a big deal because in the library we work in, we need basically the more people a game can fit, the better. Just because we get a lot of people coming through the library who all want to play games, and it's a lot easier. We can service a lot of people at one time.
Right. And that's a huge deal with the after-school rush.
Right.
So that we have stopped putting in discs directly after school, and instead we are seating our machines. And we're lucky. We've got six different stations that we can play games at that we've seated them each with some four-player games so that players can come in, jump in, and start playing those. And, you know, there are some that are constantly popular and others that sort of fade in and out of popularity over time.
Right. And the other important part is this lets them play together and learn sportsmanship and stuff like that.
Which is a huge deal when you're dealing with tweens and early teens, I think.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got one game that exceeds even the four-player benchmark we've given, and that is Night Squad. So what is Night Squad?
So Night Squad is a game where you have all kinds of crazy mini-game options. Everybody plays as a knight, and maybe they're trying to collect as many grails as they can and fight each other off for it. Or they're trying to pick up I think there's a mode called Juggernaut where you have like a machine gun, and so you're trying to be the one to hold the machine gun for the longest time. Stuff like that.
Right. So King of the Hill mode, Capture the Flag mode, those kinds of things.
Right.
And it's very neat. We've only ever really played it with four players, though with screens being as big as they are today, you could play them with eight. And if you have enough controllers, that's kind of neat. Now, it is strictly a conflict game. And so today we're going to offer a wide variety of games. They're not all going to be beat-em-ups. Though looking at the list, there are quite a few that involve that. And it's not cooperation in any sort of the way. And
it does have team play.
Oh, does it?
It does have team play.
Okay, well, tell me that.
So you can break each other up into teams. Like, they've got some soccer modes. They've got some Capture the Flag style modes, where you'll be broken up into teams, and so each team is trying to outdo the other. Maybe score the most goals, capture the most flags, and hold those locations. Stuff like that.
Right. And so it's one of those games that we had on the machines for a while, and we actually put it up several times for folks to play, but they'd always want to change it. And then one week, all of a sudden, it was on the screen all of the time.
Oh, yeah. And I think it helps because one of the kids actually unlocked a special character for it. And so he wanted to play it all the time because
that was his character.
Yeah.
And we've also found that with some of these games that we'll be talking about, that because they're not AAA titles that have had the advertising budget behind them, that the kids don't normally come in wanting to play those games.
Right. They don't go for it. They just kind of somehow happen to find it. Maybe they'll see somebody else playing it, or it'll still be that time in the day where we're not changing discs yet, so they'll go through the list and be like, oh, what's this?
Right. Now, the most success that we've had is we have a volunteer who comes into the room, and we have a student worker it's like a worker rehabilitation kind of thing. Actually, that doesn't sound right. It's not because he was a criminal, but it's just because
I think they're just kind of trying to give him more opportunities.
Right.
Sort of program.
And that we will have them sit in and play some of the games so that the other kids will come in, see them playing. Because it's amazing how often when they know they can't randomly change games that they will try something new just because they want to be doing something. And so they will then come in and they've offered to play it. That's how we've gotten them to play several of the games on this list, is just by either playing it ourselves or having our teen volunteers jump in and play it and then you know, since Ian is looked up to by most of the kids who come into the room, if he's interested in something, they will at least pay attention to it.
Oh, yeah, they will. And it's fascinating to see that kind of influence, because that can, you can really use that kind of influence in some really good ways.
And it's great for Ian because he doesn't consider himself to have a huge cadre of friends. And mm-hmm. so I think it's a great builder, confidence boost for him as well when he realizes that, you know, that there are people here who like him or pay attention to his opinion.
Yeah.
That
I think one of the little Minecraft ones actually brought him in like a little present one day.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Neat.
Yeah.
And speaking of presents, I don't know if you were here when this happened, but when we were post-hurricane, we opened the room up for all ages, not just teens and tweens. And one of the kids said, "Oh, thank you for letting me play," and he tried to tip me.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. And I was like, what is going on?
It's like, no, you don't have to give me money for doing my job. Someone else already takes care of that. But thank you very much. Come back and play on Fridays when we do our all ages stuff.
Yeah.
All right, so that what was that game again that we were talking about?
Night Squad.
So there's another game that's been around for, quite a bit longer at this point that also deals with sort of the knights and whatnot.
Castle Crashers!
And I think we've talked about it before on the show as well.
Oh, probably, because this is one of my favorites. I love this one.
Yeah, as four-player co-ops go, it has all the poop jokes you could ask for.
Oh, yeah. It's one of those games where it's like, oh, this is... It's kind of gross.
Right.
But it's the right kind of gross.
Right. It's juvenile humor, not mature humor.
Right.
So, and in that, you have a variety of color of knights, and they will level up as time goes on, and they'll be able to increase their power. So over time, they'll become more and more differentiated as far as are they good at magic or are they good at beating each other up. And those will continue on as the game plays over and over again. So if you've got a student or patron who comes in and plays the white knight every time, then that one is going to be, you know, racked up in points.
Oh, yeah. What's kind of neat, too, about that one is each of the different knights has a different kind of the magic they're good at. So they're even differentiated in that way. So, like, I think it's the orange knight does fire stuff.
The green knight does poison, chlorine gas or something.
And so their attacks will do, like, damage over time, whereas I think the blue knight does ice and will actually, like, freeze other characters.
And I will say, though, that one thing I've noticed in the library, that just about any time any character has a gas attack, it gets labeled the fart attack. So just be ready for that. But it's neat. It's an animated, it looks like an animated cartoon.
It really does.
And... It's a masterful little game, and it's frantic, and I played it for many hours and gone home with a sore thumb. So I recommend Castle Crashers quite a bit. Do you have another one on this list you're excited about?
Overcooked. I love Overcooked.
Oh, yes. Overcooked. It starts with the flying spaghetti monster and time travel. And then what happens?
And then it's just, you know, you start up with these normal-ish kind of kitchens, and then for whatever reason, you know... Somebody decided it was a good idea to build, like, a kitchen that's half in one truck, half in another truck.
Well, how does it play? Start with how does it play.
So, the way it plays is that you're basically trying to run a little restaurant. And it's cooperative, so you're trying to serve as many dishes as you can. And so you'll put, you know, one player doing chopping duty, another player bringing the ingredients and putting them in the pot and making sure they don't burn, and then somebody maybe serving the food. That process is kind of simple, but gets really chaotic when you have all sorts of people who start sort of drifting from their roles, and then the game itself adds different elements of, oh, well, you know, suddenly an earthquake's going to happen, so unless you put somebody up there, you're not going to have any access to your...
People aren't going to be able to wash dishes skillets. Or deliver food or cook the food. Or you're on a boat that's tilting back and forth, so things are moving back and forth across the thing. Or you've got pedestrians wandering through, taking up space and getting in the way. So every level offers new challenges.
Right. And so a lot of it's about adapting and planning for whatever is about to happen in the level.
And it is one of the best teamwork games that I have seen in a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Because it helps if you've got someone who is sort of the, oh, I'm going to see what happens. In fact, you could play it with five players by having someone say, okay, here's what we need to do. And saying, no, no, quit doing that and someone go do this thing. Or we've got this, these are the orders that are coming up, so chop extra onions and forget about the tomatoes or what have you.
Right, then, you could have a fifth player just watching the orders alone.
Right, and so there is a lot that you can do with it, and it is nonviolent in as much as you're not shooting each other and whatnot. There's the threat of the giant flying spaghetti monster destroying the Earth, but that, you know, that, you only see that in the beginning and probably, you know, in some of the later levels.
Probably, but I think it looks like it's one of those games where this is potentially going to have a sort of non-violent outcome.
Right. Oh, yeah. The reason you're cooking is because you want to get good enough that you can prepare enough dishes for the spaghetti monster. And it doesn't actually fly.
Oh, the ever-peckish. That's what they call it.
Yes, the ever-peckish. That you can feed it enough food that it gets so distracted and doesn't eat the planet.
Yeah.
Neat game. We discovered that one. It was on sale.
It was on sale for Xbox One at one point.
It was.
And that's how we grabbed it.
And then they also had another game that I really, really like. Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time.
Oh, yeah.
Which has a little bit more gunplay in it. So the universe was powered by love. And there were all kinds of love engines and a source of love that powered everything and blah, blah, blah. Well, something happened. The universe was invaded. The heart engine got broken. And now you have to get into a spaceship and maneuver it around to try and save the universe. And you can play it one player, in which case you have a little pet dog that you say, go do this and go fire these guns or whatever. And quite honestly, the dog is a better shot than I would ever be. you can also have up to four players manning different stations on this ship that you are flying around and basically solving weird puzzles for, fighting off creatures that are coming through. Sometimes you have to fly into like spheres of water and figure out what that happens. And there's just a whole bunch of different things going on. And also a great, great cooperative game.
Oh, yeah, because you go, all right, you man the shield, I'll drive, he'll do the gun on the left or the right. It's just an interesting little game.
As long as we're talking about co-ops, how about Gauntlet?
Oh, Gauntlet's so much fun. So it is kind of your classical dungeon delve. So it's top-down. It looks a lot like Diablo, and basically you pick a class to play as, and you run around and you kill monsters, and you work together as a team to basically kill the monsters, grab the loot, make it through the level. And each character type has a different sort of power set, so you're trying to strategize and go, all right, he's going to run in there and be the sort of front line, and the ranger is going to attack from the back.
Right. Now, if you remember the old Gauntlet from back in the 1900s, this is a little more complex than that. There's more to it than a stick and a button. And I think maybe there were two buttons back then.
Well, because we have more buttons now.
We have more buttons and we must use
them. See where technology has taken us. More buttons.
More buttons. It's not so bright and colorful because they have the ability to put on more rich textures. And sometimes the screen is kind of
dark.
Yeah. but it's a neat game. And once again, the players are all sort of working together to fight off the evil. But it's not, I don't think, an E-rated game because you are totally legit.
I think it's T.
Yeah. You are, killing things with your bows and axes and whatnot, and your characters will die. And, there's a bit of the violence. So where we could play Overcooked with the children, they might have a tough time with it. Our YA patrons can do any of these things, and so it works very well. Yep, so all these were free, right?
Yeah.
Because we had PlayStation Plus and Xbox One Gold, so that's why we have some of these on specific stations.
Yeah.
And so what is Rayman Legends?
It is a platformer. You run around, you try to make your way through these crazy areas where you're trying not to fall and die. And what's neat is that you can play it with up to four people, and so it could be, all right, well, I'm going to try running through this, and if I die, you're going to revive me by punching like my little bubble that will pop up and freeing me from it.
Right. It was kind of like the Super Mario game that had the little bubble characters which would float around.
Oh, that was, what game was that? Yoshi's Island.
Also just the Super Marios that they did for the Wii.
Oh, yeah.
They had that.
They
as well.
Also had a bubble.
So, probably originally from Yoshi's Island, but. All right. And so basically, if you're looking for platformer action, that's a neat one. It's pretty straightforward. You're moving along, you're doing some puzzle solving, but a lot of it is just trying to survive the environment.
Right. And some of the most fun levels of that game are the. So, they have these levels that are based on songs. And so they've got like this medieval style level that's based on the song Black Betty. And that is so much fun to play through. And they've got a like mariachi style Eye of the Tiger. It's amazing.
Ooh, well, that sounds neat.
It is. Like all of the jumping and stuff is rhythm based. So even if you don't have a sound for rhythm, you can do it just because it's like, oh, I need to jump here. But if you're jumping at the right time, it actually matches up with the music. And it's so much fun.
Wow, I like it when they think things through that much.
Yeah.
Well, as long as we're in the co-op area, let's get a little more into the area of shooting things and blowing things up. Broforce.
Hey, Broforce!
So Broforce is a throwback to the video games of the 80s and 90s and the action video or the action movies of the 80s and early 90s, in as much as that all the characters are broed up versions of those things. Like there's what, Brobocop?
Yeah, Brobocop. I think there's like
Rambro.
Broly or something.
Yeah, so basically they have substituted one of the syllables in the names of each of these things with bro, and you will be going along and you'll rescue them and then you can
play as them and use their different crazy power sets and blow everything up.
Yes, you can blow up the terrain. The terrain is destructible in this one, like pretty much into the excess.
Yeah, which is really interesting because it's like, okay, you're super explodey, but you almost have to not be too explodey.
Right, because you could make it so you can't get to something.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I can't get there now because I blew up everything that would let me get there.
That is almost kind of an exercise in self-control.
Huh. That's why they have so much trouble with it.
Yeah.
So it's neat, and it also... Not that anybody necessarily should, but if you're trying to, you know, talk about 80s culture with your patrons or students, then that's, I guess, a place you could start.
Yeah.
But it's popular among the kids who come in from school kind of restless and ready, and they want to play like Halo or whatever. But since we're not doing those discs at that point, that's where they will find that outlet.
Right, those are our Halo first-person shooter, shoot things in the face guys. Battle Block Theater. I love this one. I love this one so much. So the four-player for this one is a sort of fighty arena where basically you guys are just beating each other up.
All right, so it's kind of like a Super Smash Brothers sort of thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Super Smash Brothers sort of thing. I think it's got some sort of platforming elements to it, though. So it's like if you mixed Super Smash Brothers together with, like, even more platforming.
Oh, okay. Right, so you are trying to get up to the top while beating each other up. That sort of thing.
Yeah, or evading each other by getting up to the top. There is a two-player story mode, though.
Right, so Battle Block has... That's what I was about to say. Battle Block has some other stuff.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit.
The two-player story mode, that one is a blast. It is also a platformer, like... kind of like Rayman, but I would say it's more vicious and probably going to kill you more often.
Like you do.
Yeah, and the story, so it's made by the same guys who did Castle Crashers, so it's got a lot of the same sort of immature kind of humor, which is a lot of fun, though, because you got, like, a crazy storyteller in this one.
Right. So now, when I first played Battle Block Theater, I apparently wandered off into the wrong part of the game, and there's a place where people can make their own maps, right?
Your own maps.
And if you don't use some sort of discretion, you can get sucked into some that are nearly impossible.
Right.
And so instead of playing the game the way it was meant to be played, I was basically banging my head against the wall for 45 minutes trying to get through some stuff that, yeah, if you don't know what you're doing, you're not going to be able to get through. So make sure you have them play the stuff that they can get through instead of just starting off with
Right.
The weird and the wild and the unusual.
Go for the story mode. The story mode's pretty good, and the challenge level, you know, gradually builds up. And it's a good sort of game where it's like, okay, you can help each other, or you can almost kind of sabotage each other. So it is also kind of a self-control sort of deal.
Speaking of control, let's go talk about Tricky Towers, which is kind of a competitive Tetris game that our children's librarian has come in and played with us quite a bit. You showed it to her one time when she was passing through the room.
Yep.
And since then, she has come back multiple occasions and said, well, there's no one here. We're about to have a hurricane. Let's play this.
Yep.
In Tricky Towers, there are several modes. There's survival, there's a race to the top, and basically either you are trying to survive without getting above a certain height, or you're trying to race to get to a specific height, or you're just trying to stay alive longer than the other players. And so they have different modes and different difficulties, and you can set randomly on any of those, and it plays up to four players. Now, there's one other special twist on this.
Is it the physics?
No. The physics are good. So yeah, you've got good physics about what's balancing, what's not balancing.
Well, because you don't really have physics, though, in normal Tetris.
Well, you do. It's
do
stuff
you?
Drops straight down.
Okay.
It's rudimentary physics.
No. Well, yeah, but usually once you attach a thing in Tetris, it like locks into place.
Oh, right.
Not with this game, because your whole tower could end up falling down because of bad blocks you put on it, which is really interesting.
Or it could fall down for other reasons.
Yes. Like the magic?
Yes. Like sabotage from your opponents.
Yeah. Ice blocks.
Yeah. So I can decide, oh, I have magical power up right now. I can use it to help myself.
Or sabotage.
Or to mess with all the other players. And so it might be I change something into a super big block.
Yeah.
For everybody, and it's going to fall there. Or,
now you got to watch out, because that one can actually be kind of helpful.
It has helped quite a bit.
Yeah.
Or I could do a sabotage in such a way that like maybe it'll turn it all into ice, or so that stuff that hits it will slip off if it's not perfectly flat. And sometimes even if it appears it is.
Isn't there one also that almost like kind of unglues some of your blocks together or something weird? Because I know that one messed me up.
I'm not sure. There are ones that if you're using for the benefit that you can lock stuff into place permanently, or create an extra plateau for yourself so that you can start up higher.
Yeah.
And those kinds of things. There's a lot of fun to be had in Tricky Towers.
Oh, there really is.
And yeah, four-player game. And it is kind of, it's solo until you remember that, oh, wait, my magic works.
Oh, yeah.
The weird thing is we were playing it and you'd think, okay, one person is going to be the best at this. But depending on the kinds of things that we were doing.
Right. The different sort of sets, like the survival and the race and the. Right.
So like my apparently where I excelled was is not going above a certain point, you know, so it was I'm going to hang blocks off the side and I'm going to create basically a Christmas tree shape of things that go off the edge instead of stacking up
Tetris limbo
as high as I can. Yeah. And then there's the one that is the race for just as high as you can get. And I think, is that the one that you did well at, or were you the survival person?
I think I was the race person.
And so, but anyway, so it's fun. And if you hit it on, you know, depending on how skilled your players are, you can say, we're going to do it at easy, moderate, or difficulty level, or random.
Right.
So if you're playing with youngers, then set it on easy and set it on random so that each time they're playing a different kind of game, that way people will feel like they have the ability to excel where maybe Josh is always good at climbing as fast as he can.
Yeah, I think that's why I really enjoyed that a lot once we set it to random, because it's like, oh my God, I got to change my play style.
Yes, yeah. So adaptivity, that's a good thing right there.
Oh yeah.
So we haven't talked about racing games very much. We should talk about Trials Fusion.
Oh, that one's so fun.
So you're on bikes or a unicorn.
If you're a cat riding a unicorn?
Yes.
With, for whatever reason, a golden desert eagle and a bandana?
And a bandana. So basically, there's up to four people who are playing, and there's a course that you're trying to navigate without flipping over and falling off your bike.
Right.
Or your unicorn.
Yeah.
And it's jumps and stunts and, you know, popping wheelies at the right time, and it's just a very short drag race usually. Not, I mean, you know, each session is usually played in 5 minutes or less, I'd say.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you get in, you play, and once again, it's perfectly designed for four players to be sort of all competing without shooting at each other.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I know so much of it just ends up being staying on your bike.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, I'm not going to rush this. I'm just going to get it right. And that's a good chance to win.
And you got all those wipeouts, which are kind of insane.
Yeah, they hurt. They hurt to watch.
Yeah, they are painful.
As long as we're kind of going kind of sporty, a whole classification of sports games, such as the 2K series or the Madden or
NBA, Madden.
Yeah, so Madden, which FIFA. Is just football, but there's the 2K, NBA 2K or WW 2K, or I think there's the baseball version.
Yeah.
Probably, I don't know where the hockey game comes in.
I don't know. I know the kids will look at me and they'll go, I want to play 2K. And I'm just like, which one?
And there's FIFA. So there's a whole bunch of different sports games that you can play, especially if you've found that if a particular kind of sport is really big in your town, if it's basketball, the basketball one is going to be usually popular. If it's football, football is going to be usually popular. That you should definitely grab those up because they can play four players. They play one player very well. So there's a good spread.
And they'll get played all the time.
Right.
They just will.
I can't speak to the specifics on any of them, but normally, like for the hockey one, you probably don't need to buy it every year. But, you know, every 2 or 3 years, they have by that point, they have made enough upgrades that it's sort of worth getting a new one.
Yeah. And sometimes, I know we got the one of the new NBAs for our PlayStation Plus. That was one of our free games.
Right. It was 2K16.
Yes, NBA 2K16.
And that was, of course, about a month or two before 2K17 came out, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, check that out. And also, I know that EA Access has a special deal where you can pay for it for a year and you get to play like 10 hours of any of their various games before they come out even. So if that's something that you want to do for your site, then it gives you a variety. And I think it also has access to some of their back catalog as well. But it's just sort of a special deal that you can even get some of the stuff early. So if you wanted to do a pre-release party or a release party, you could do that. Here's a game I'm not at all familiar with, but you told me to put it on the list. Magicka 2.
Oh, Magicka. I love Magicka. Okay, so this one's really neat because it's a cooperative game, but you can very easily kill each other. So this is another one of those self-control sort of games. And you're playing as these newbie mages who are sent out on some kind of quest. What's so neat about this game is you have a bunch of different types of magic. I think there's like 8 of them. And you mix them together to kind of make your own spells. And I love that so much. Like, nice. There's a ray beam type of magic, and you can mix that together with fire magic. And so you can have this ray beam just setting stuff on fire. If you mix that together with like water magic, then you're just sort of gushing water to maybe put things out. Stuff like that.
Well, if I'd have known that was 4-player, I would have put it on more often.
Yeah, it's a neat little 4-player game.
Here we have a couple of games that aren't games, and we've talked about Minecraft enough that we're just going to say, get it, it's great, go listen to some of our previous Minecraft episodes.
Yeah.
But the other one is a little bit goaty.
Hey! Goat Simulator?
Yes.
Is it Goat Simulator?
Goat Simulator. Explain Goat Simulator.
So it's a game where you're a goat. And it is the most absurd game. I love it so much. You run around as a goat, just causing chaos and licking things, and your tongue attaches to stuff and yanks things around, and you just destroy everything. And I think you basically try to unlock sort of crazy hidden achievements in the world so that you can unlock even more crazy looking goats.
And weird goat skins, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like tall goat, which is a giraffe.
Or angel goat.
Yeah. Rocket booster goat.
Hey, Cass, why don't you come in and tell people what you like about the game?
Yeah, you want to tell people?
Let our listeners know.
Goat Simulator? Goat Simulator is really fun. The rocket booster goat is the funnest, and it's just an all-around fun game.
Well, so it looks like we're going to have to wrap this up because we have had kids show up while we were recording. One other thing we're going to talk about, let's say we've talked about Rocket League in the past. It's still one of our most popular 4-player couch co-ops. Go and check that out. And Cass, thank you for joining us and letting us know what you thought about Goat Simulator. All right. And so thank you for listening to the Games in Schools and Libraries podcast. I'm Donald Dennis.
And I'm Stephanie Fry.
Games in Schools and Libraries podcast is hosted by Inverse Genius, so head over to InverseGenius.com and listen to our other fine shows, such as On Board Games, On RPGs, the Inverse Genius podcast, and we also have the brand new On Minis games, which should be out by the time this one posts, and we host the Room Escape Divas, a show all about escape rooms